to our warm-up speaker, Elle.
My name's Elle, and I'm an alcoholic. I just want to say, first and foremost, I am so grateful to be up here. I feel like this is a huge privilege. When I was attending these meetings, all I saw was old-timers up here, and I thought, awesome, you know, when I have like 15 years of sobriety, I'm going to rock this. And I just feel, you know, I feel so blessed that Britta asked me, and we had a fantastic dinner before, which I am so grateful for. So my story is, I come from an alcoholic home. Those were the behaviors I learned. They weren't always great, and they weren't always healthy, but that's exactly what I learned. And my mom was my alcoholic, and my dad was my, he was the knight in shining armor, the I'm going to jump in and save, which was awesome. I'm grateful I didn't have two fucked up parents. Blessing. But I wanted what my mom had, so I did what she did. I thought her life, she was a she's a coke dealer, and she was a bartender, and she was a stripper. And I thought, as I say this to you guys, you know, it doesn't sound that great. Stay with me though, okay? I just thought she was so glamorous. I thought this, you know, she was so pretty, and she always had friends, and we never talked about anything serious. It was always very, you know, like, oh, the girls don't like you at school. Well, it's because they're jealous. And I was like, yes, yes, they're jealous, absolutely. And that was the extent of our relationship. But I got to see the firsthand what the progressive our progressive disease looks like. And she went from being a very beautiful woman to dying at 47 from cirrhosis. And it got really bad. And there was I just didn't feel like I had someone to talk to. So I started drinking and using. I was that kid who didn't get better. I wasn't like, maybe if I'm just better, I'll get more attention. I thought, maybe if I'm just as, you know, badass as possible, then that will be a good way for me to find some attention. And so I did that. I started off at 13. I started drinking and using, and I didn't let go. It gave me that self-esteem. I grew up in Huntington Beach, and I felt really inferior. There was a lot of really, really pretty blonde girls. Paris Hilton was very popular at the time. I wanted to be Paris Hilton. I thought Paris Hilton was thebomb.com. So unfortunately, I couldn't do what she did because I just didn't have the resources that she had. So I kind of improvised. We're alcoholics. We're kind of creative. So I drank and used, and it was what it was. I put drinking and using first. I dropped out of school. I was in about four or five continuation schools. I eventually got sent to the foster system. And when I turned 18, I decided to kind of turn my life around. My mom had passed away at that time, and I thought I just really wanted to fill that hole. And my disease was so loud. It was talking to me every day. So I decided to fill it with Christianity, which is great, which is absolutely great, except I was an untreated alcoholic. So what that looked like was I was walking up to you, and I was trying to save you with the blood of Christ. And if you said no, I didn't understand boundaries. So boundaries weren't a word. I didn't know that was a word. So I would just keep pushing my will upon you. And I ended up completely, absolutely alone. That was the first time in my disease I had absolutely nobody around me because of my own behavior. So my solution, because I didn't have solutions, I didn't have a big book, and I didn't have a way, I didn't have anything, I look back and I don't judge myself. I'm grateful for my journey. It just was really radical. It was like an MTV real life. It was just so exciting, guys. you really should have been there living it. So I decided to do the opposite. Just my pendulum, it swings really far to the left and really far to the right. So I took, I saved up money, and I decided to travel across country. I decided to backpack for 2 years. I had it mapped out, and I went to, and I did. You know, I bought all my REI gear, and I was like, I'm this solo feminist female. I'm going to, like, take over the world. And I might not have blonde hair, but it's the spirit of Paris is with me. So I embarked. I was 19, and I went across country. And the most important thing was no morals, right? Because Christians have so many good morals, and I'm, like, way too cool now, and I'm hip, so, like, YOLO. My motto is YOLO, which started out really good in the beginning. It didn't end well, though. So I went to I went to Seattle, and I got a party in Seattle, and I went to Hawaii. I did South by Southwest. I got a hike in Austin. I got to hike the Grand Canyon. I was there for Arizona Centennial. I stayed on a couple Hare Krishna farms. It was really fun. I went to Elvis Week, Long Live the King. The funniest part is I wasn't a fan before. Now I'm like, you don't like Elvis? What's wrong with you? And that's part of my character defects. If you don't like what I like, there has to be something wrong with you. I mean, it just makes sense. So I did that, and I went to Mississippi, and I just went all over the United States. And just as I was doing this, I stayed on a couple hippie communes, and I really thought I had my shit together. I was hanging out naked, at hot springs, and so glamorous. But over time, I have that untreated disease, and everything looks good, and I can look good on the surface. And my friends and family were telling me that they were envious, and they were living vicariously. But I was burning bridges, and I had no coping skills with any. I didn't know how to be in relationship to people in a healthy way. My relationship skills were, I'm going to dominate you, or I'm going to be submissive to you, but I just don't know how to treat you like a loving, kind human being. So I started burning bridges, and that's when my disease took off. I decided that drugs and alcohol were my solution. If I just drank more, if I just took more LSD, that's where my name comes from, actually. L is originally for LSD. So you guys know. It's like a meet and greet now. I partied and I drank and I got uglier and uglier. It's that progressiveness of the disease, and I was spiritually dead. I was just absolutely dead, and I wanted anything to fill me. So as I went down, I started running out of money, so I started not staying at college farms, and I started growing weed. I don't know if that might have been up. I'm not quite sure. Depends on your morals, right? But then grower assistant, then I started really running out of money, and I started just seeking lower companionship with anybody that I could be around. So I started hanging around the lower ends, and then I ended up on Humboldt C Street, which is kind of like the Skid Row Humboldt, I guess, except it's not a bunch of like tough guys, a bunch of burnout hippies. It was pretty nasty still. But I felt good, even, because I like to seek lower companionship. So anything about you that I feel superior to, I'm going to hang out with. That I don't like people who I think are better than me. So I was like, oh, well, you guys don't have teeth. So, ha, 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 motherfuckers. I like to hang out in the gutter. I like to hang out with people who push shopping carts, who believe in aliens. If you find them, you're going to find me right next to them under a bridge. So but I started using and drinking really hard, and I went into a psychosis for 2 months, and I ended up in a mental hospital, and I must have got arrested, like, I want to say 6 or 7 times. When they finally checked me into this mental hospital for, like, the 6th time they kept releasing me, they said, we're going to keep you here for 3 years because there's nobody. You have no brain cells. There's not one in there. And I thought the Kardashians were after me. I told you guys. I thought the FBI was after me. It was really intense. So they said, if you call somebody that will take you from this town, that would be great. That would be amazing. Who is there that can take you? So I called up my dad, because my dad's always been my enabler. And I said, Dad, these people, they're fucking nuts. I don't know what their problem is. I'm doing great. And I'm an upstanding citizen, guys. And he said, all right, I'll be there in 8 hours. So he picked me up. And what they told him, and I'll never forget, was L doesn't have a drink, or L doesn't have a mental problem. She's not schizophrenic. She has a drug and alcohol problem, and she needs help. So my dad brought me to Visalia. I stayed in a little motel, and every single night, because I was so messed up, I thought people were going to break in and kidnap me, just like in the movie Taken. I don't know if you guys have seen that. That's exactly what I thought. I didn't realize my market value was so low that they probably wouldn't take me. But in my head, I was going for a lot. I was like a black diamond or something. So, and I would tell my people, I would tell that to my dad, and I would tell these people, my friends who I met, in these rooms, and they said, that's absolutely fine. Just keep coming back. Just stay. Don't give up until the miracle happens. And you never have to do this alone if you don't want to. And that was great. For me, that was fantastic because I didn't hear that. Those last things people were telling me. So I just stayed. At my first meeting, I picked out the most beautiful woman in the room. I thought, oh my God. If she's beautiful, she must have such a good personality. It just makes sense, right? If she's beautiful, she must be spiritual also. And have strong logic then. But it luckily for me, that was God doing for me. That was my first miracle in program. God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And she ended up being amazing. And they would, it was Mandy and Marla. And Mandy and Marla would take me up and they'd take me to a meeting every single day. And I'd show up because I thought I was so different. I would look for the differences and I'd show up in fishnets in winter and these big fur fake jackets. And I'd stand up and say, I have nothing in fucking common with you guys. I don't want to be here and I don't think I have a problem. And they'd say, that's fantastic. Sit down. Keep coming back. That's great. That's wonderful. And I just did that. And slowly I realized that I do absolutely have a problem. And I didn't make a lot of life choices. But I have a serious drug and alcohol problem. And I'm going to end up dead. It's amazing I didn't die on the streets. So I just went to every single meeting. I'd show up and I'd look weird and I smell weird and I say the weirdest things you've ever heard. And people would just, you know, they would, if I talked too long, my sponsor would just kind of squeeze me on the arm and tell me to sit. And I just keep coming back. We'll love you till you love yourself. And that was the most amazing thing I could imagine. And then the next 2 years, it just kind of, you know, it just slowly, my experience has been an educational variety. So it just slowly goes up, you know. Next thing you know, I have tons of friends. They're not at healthy meetings. They're all at the Alano, but that's okay. Who cares? I have tons of friends. That's progress. And then next thing you know, I'm going to meetings. I hate it, like Christ Lutheran. I thought, I have nothing in common with you guys. I'm completely so fucking punk rock. And you guys don't understand at all. And now I hold a service commitment there. And I get to, I have two sponsors. I don't even have one sponsor. I'm so sick I have two sponsors. And I hang out with people that I never thought I'd hang out with because I like lower companionship. And it just slowly got better. I got a job. You know, my brain came back. I went to meetings. I held service commitments. And then I got a job. And then I became I became our district sales associate, which is no surprise because I'm an alcoholic and I like to bullshit. And I like to sell things to you. So then I excelled at that job. And then I found another job that I liked that related with me on a spiritual level. And I got into service and I made friends and I started working my steps. And I thought, there's no way anybody's going to... I'm so punk rock, guys. Like, nobody's going to understand my story. Nobody's going to understand my fifth step. And I told my sponsor my fifth step, and she looked at me and she said, that's great. That's nothing special. I've done worse. You're not the worst, and you're not the best. So you need to really humble yourself. And I slowly, gradually started making my amends. I compiled a list, and I had to call my sponsor before because I was so terrified. She made me a script. I read it, and then I called her after. And, you know, and it didn't kill me. It was amazing. It was very liberating for me. And I do things selfishly some ways just because I want to stay sober. That's why I do it. And then I can share my story. If I can do it, you can do it because I'm a chicken. So I started, I did those steps, and then I started working on a higher power of my understanding. And that was really hard for me because I like to bash you, and I like to bash your God, and I like to tell you how much better I am than you because I'm a lot smarter. And now I have a God, you know, and I don't bash other people's, and I would hope that no one would bash mine. Because I really believe that without spirituality, your life, it doesn't amount. For me, as a drug addict and alcoholic, that has been the most fulfilling thing for me other than fellowship. And then I worked my 12 steps. We got to start, we didn't have a young people's meeting, so we banded together, a couple of friends, and we have a phenomenal young people's meeting. It started out from we met together on a bench in a park. We didn't know better, so we were doing business meetings after every single meeting. That didn't last that long, but it was about a month and a half. And then we got a building, and we started out with 20 people, and now we have 50 people attending every week. People from all over. Fresno, my friend from Fresno, Adam, came to hear me speak. That's amazing. And I have a group of wonderful, beautiful babes, badass babes in my life today. And now I get to be, I'm on two different committees. I got voted in, we created a committee for young people's, and I got to be voted in as chair, and my friend Henry got to be voted in as co-chair, and Vanessa is events, Sarian's communication, Blythe is secretary, and it's phenomenal. Now I'm on another service committee also for the Valley Speaker Series. My entire day was spent with women today, preparing food. We're making the food for the entire event, which is a shit ton of food. So my life is blessed. I have a job, I'm employable, and I'm blessed beyond measure today. I'm so, you know, I have friends and community, and I can stand in front of a room of people and talk, and not talk about aliens and the Kardashians and the FBI. My life's rocking today. So, and now to, we're going to do a break, and then one of my best, most beautiful friends gets to speak, and I'm so fucking excited. So, thank you.
Let's give a warm welcome to our featured speaker, Britta.
Hello. I'm Britta, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Britta.
Hello. I just want to say thank you, Rick, for dinner tonight. That was amazing. Oh, my goodness. I'm Britta. My claim date and sobriety date is July 22nd, 2014. Coming up on 3 years. It's so exciting. I'm so blessed to share my experience, strength, and hope, because I wouldn't be here without these rooms. To start off a little bit, can I move this over a little bit? It's okay. I grew up in Three Rivers. I'm a middle child, so I had a nice, you know, family growing up. My mom did drink when I was little, so I was the one that was the stubborn, wanted to start the fights and kick, so I was always antagonizing my mom. She would drink and get really mean, and my sister and brother would run, and I would get in her face and make her yell, and I was a brat. But growing up, I just felt different. I hated it. You know, I was super shy, not outgoing, tall. I was 5'11 and a half, seventh grade, so everyone was super short. They called me Gumby and Jolly Green Giant. But I guess for me, growing up, it was... I was scared. I didn't know. You know, I grew up in a Christian home, always going to church. You know, my mom always said, put the smile on. I always smiled, but go home. And it was just like not wanting to go home. And I guess after eighth grade, I graduated. I went to CVC. I went to Central Valley Christian High School. And that was hard, too. You know, I tried to fit in. You know, I wasn't the blonde, tall, skinny one. You know, I was bigger, thin, and short. As 5'11", I was short at CBC. And I wanted to be on the volleyball team. I wanted to be that beach girl playing volleyball pro. And my freshman year, I got in a horse accident. And I cracked my skull, fractured my jaw, and I couldn't play sports for 3 years. And that just, that took that love, that something that I craved to play. And I took the love and that turned to working on weekends and eating. You know, I started just eating, try to fill that void. And I guess my junior year in high school, my mom, for my sweet 16 birthday present, she put me on Jenny Craig to lose weight and to look pretty. And so, you know, I lost all this weight my junior year in high school. And then, you know, I was shy, tomboy, no makeup, no boyfriend, scared to talk to guys. But it was, I just felt like I had like three personalities, you know, at high school, super shy, followed the rules. Weekends, I would hang out with people from Woodlake and sit at Borders and smoke cigarettes. And then Sundays, go to church. So it just felt juggling different personalities and who I was hanging out with. I never felt myself. I was always trying to be that chameleon. I could be with these people. I could be with these people. I hated who I was. And it sucked. What is she thinking of me? I always thought too much about what other people thought of me. And that's kind of growing up is always smiling and being perfect. So my first drunk, I was turning, let's see, I was turning 18. I threw myself at the Pride birthday party. So I throw myself a surprise birthday party. And I told my mom, I'm not supposed to know this, Mom, but I totally found out. So my friend had a house in Visalia, and we went down Mooney and got liquor, and we came back. And, you know, that was my first time taking shots and smoking weed, and everyone, you know, got drunk and, you know, playing with Pringles and pulling raw canned Pringles and eating the Pringles. Like, yeah, it was just, it was crazy. But I came out of my shell. You know, I became that superwoman, that confidence that, you know, I didn't give up anything. I didn't care about what people thought of me, you know. And so I was like, oh, I like this. And then I went off to college. You know, I wasn't going to go to college. I was working at Glicksme Market when I was 17. And my mom's like, you need to apply. You know, you're smart. And I didn't think I was smart. You know, my mom, you know, I'd have the science fair projects in junior high or essays and papers. My mom's like, oh, go to bed. It's okay. We'll finish it tomorrow. And then it'd be done the next day. So I'm like, oh, this is cool. I didn't have to do anything. You know, wow, I got an A. So I never did anything. I never pushed myself to do anything. So I'm like, I'm not going to get into college. I can't take my mom to college. Yes, you can. Call email. So I got accepted to Cal State Stanislaus, and I moved to Turlock. And here I was, you know. So high school is like 250. And so I go to college, you know, I'm sitting in the corner, and they're having the hula, you know, introducing the freshmen. And I'm like, I don't want to be this shy girl anymore. And I thought, vodka. And I just went over and just started drinking. And I came, you know, the girl on the table. And I was the center of the attention. It was about me. And it came to be a party. That was it. You know, I went running with it. And, you know, I got kicked out of classes my first semester. And three of my, you know, drinking buddies got kicked off the campus. And it was just, it was a crazy, that first semester, my freshman year, you know, and I got introduced to a lot of different substances, and, you know, I blacked out instantly, but I craved it. And, you know, my mom would be calling me, and how's your papers doing? I'm like, good. Oh, you need to send them to me so I can see them, make sure you're okay. And, you know, a 5-page paper turned into a 15-page paper, and I'd be just like, not even calling her to look at my work, just emailing all my work to her. You know, I don't have to do anything. So my whole freshman year, I drank, did lots of substances, you know, and never did really well in the relationships, never had that commitment. You know, I'd never been in a real relationship without that substance. And so, you know, throughout my college years, it was just trying to find out me. I was always going with the preppies, and then all of a sudden it turned into goths, and then I was the one with the boxer shorts, baggy jeans with holes everywhere with safety pins. You know, that was me. And then the next day I'd be a cute mini skirt, like clueless girl. And I mean, I had different personalities. I seriously followed, like, I didn't know who I was. But I ended up doing 5 years at Stanislaus. And I met my ex-husband. I told myself never talk to and bring home a guy from the bar. And I did. And I met him. My bar name was Tiffany, because you go around to the bar and say Bridget. They're like, huh? You know, you can't say Bridget. So I was Tiffany when I went to the bars. And I have a bar name. And so I met this guy, and, you know, first out of his mouth, you know, let's drink. You know, we were at the bar, we got high, and all of a sudden, you know, he's living with me. And I was always the, you're in my space, you need to leave. But he was basically me, happy, you know, didn't do anything. I was in school, so we ended up moving in together, and it was on from there. And that's what leveled, it brought me to another substance, you know, and I got addicted to heroin quick, you know, and alcohol was thrown out the window, weed, I mean, anything. That was my drug I was chasing. And, you know, it got really bad. I did graduate college with my bachelor's in communications. I did graduate, but I was super high, but I did graduate. And my parents were like, now what are you going to do? And I never took the time to even know what I wanted to do with this major. I just like to talk, you know. And I was like, I don't know. You guys figure it out. I haven't done anything, you know. And I didn't spend the time. I didn't think about what do I really want to do with my life. And so I told my mom, you know, give me a couple months. Let me try to find a job. And they left, and I was still at my apartment. And my goal was just to supply my habit. You know, here I was with my cute little lime green slug bug and my cute interview clothes my parents bought me. And I was at truck stops panhandling. Oh, I don't have gas money. I don't have this. And getting cash just to go buy what I wanted. You know, I was not looking for work. I started being a runner for my dealer, you know, got pulled over several times, never arrested, but I was doing those things because I didn't know what else. I just wanted to fill that void, that confusion, that loneliness, that spiritual bankruptcy. I had not had a spiritual relationship ever. You know, I knew about God. I knew about, you know, everything. But I never, you know, instead of praying for not letting me get caught, it wasn't praying for helping me, you know, find me that guidance. So my parents, I came home. They wanted me to come home, and we got in a fight, and I left. And basically, I was homeless, living in my lime green slug bug for 3 months. I was homeless with my ex-husband and another girl I picked up on the truck stop. So this random person we picked up, and here we are. Our whole day for 3 months was just panhandling. I would be walking into Walmart, changing clothes, and walking out. You know, I would be doing shampooing my hair at a truck stop, you know, and here I am with a bachelor's degree. You know, here I am knowing what's right, and yet wanting to just chase that high and get, you know, as much as I wanted to black out, you know. And it was hard. It was just a constant struggle every day because I didn't want to get sick. I couldn't stand that feeling of being sick, and I hated going. I didn't know what to do. I remember those days so vividly because it was awful. My parents found me and they said, "We're done. You need to get help." So they sent me to Bakersfield to St. Mary's Hospital for detox. So my mom checked me in and said, "You cannot leave this facility. You need to stay here for 5 days." So she left me a carton of cigarettes, and that was it. And here I was going through the worst withdrawals. I remember those withdrawals and just sitting there. And there's another person. He was there withdrawing off of substance abuse as well. And he was going to leave faster than I. I was only there for like 3 days, and he was going to leave. He's like, "Well, come on, come with me." Not even knowing this person. "Okay, let's go." You know, here I am in Bakersfield, not knowing where I am, not knowing who this person is, and leaving with a complete stranger. I went with him, went to his place, hung out for a week, got high off of other stuff. And I'm like, "Hey, he's not fun anymore." And I called my mom. "Mom, can you come get me?" And it was just that crazy, that sick, you don't... I could have been killed. I could have been, you know, anything. But you don't think of that. I was thinking of what can I get out of it. And so, of course, my mom came and met me and picked me up. And she's like, "I can't believe you went home with this person. You don't know him. Just because, you know, you think you know someone and they're kind to you, you go home with a complete stranger for a week." So that was not good. You know, I've made lots of stupid things, lots of stupid mistakes. They sent me to, by this time, I went to rehab. I went to rehab in Monterey. And they sent me to the Beacon House, and they said, "Okay, you can't leave here. We mean it." So I stayed there for 28 days, and I did the whole program, going to AA meetings. And for this, for me, it was, "Let's be the chameleon. I will tell you what you want to hear. I will recite the big book. I will do the steps," you know. But I was in the back of my mind, "I can't wait to get the hell out of here and get high. I do not care what you guys think of me." And my counselor, she kept on, you know, "I want you to write on your mirror, you are beautiful." Because I didn't feel beautiful. I just saw this creepy, ugly person in the mirror. I couldn't look at myself in the face. All the stuff I stole, all the lies I've told, I couldn't keep up with them anymore. It was so much. And, you know, I played the recovery program. And then my parents said, you know, I graduated the rehab, and they said, "No, you have to stay in Monterey. You know, drugs are here in Visalia. You need to stay over there." I'm like, "Okay, let's do this." And so, you know, they paid a fortune for me to stay at the apartment on the rehab, you know, and I got, you know, my own freedom was basically finding work. And I would work at a bakery and have as many donuts. Of course, I had donuts, right? So I would have I'd work at a pastry place for 8 hours, and I'd go and work at a movie theater, so I'd have free donuts and free movies, and then I'd go back home. And so I did that for 6 months, and then finally I saved enough money, and I said, "Okay, I'm buying myself my own apartment." So I got my own little studio on a Lighthouse in Pacific Grove. And the first night, I remember walking home from working at the movie theaters. I went straight to the liquor store and bought 240s and went home. Like, not even clockwork. Just do it. And I got home, and I'm drinking this. I'm like, "What the heck?" And I'm like, "Well, it's at nighttime. It doesn't count." you know, I'm an addict. I'm not an alcoholic. You know, I have a problem with heroin. And so, you know, justification, rationalization, I'm going to do this. I don't have an issue with this. And so I went to meetings still proclaiming clean and sober, you know, but yet here I am pretending I have a year been drinking and getting high. You know, I was so lost, and I burned a lot of bridges in Monterey, and I used and abused people. And my ex-husband at the time, well, he was my boyfriend, but my ex at the time, my parents forbidden me, you know, at 24, you can't see him anymore. And the minute I moved out and got my own place, come live with me. So here he is living with me for 2 years, and no one knows, and hiding him. And that was me, the rescuer. You don't have to work. Let me take care of you. I will bring the income. Well, what can I get you? I'm the people pleaser. All my interesting character defects as I have. Trying to not buy it, but feel that love that I didn't have, that I wanted, that I craved, and still it was a hole. It was just a black hole. By then, it was getting really bad. You know, I was probably super, super skinny then, and I ended up going to the doctor because I kept on throwing up, and I was 5 months pregnant. And I'm like, crap. So then I called my mom and I said, okay, oopsies. You know, mom, I guess I got pregnant. I guess, right? How did this happen? And she was just like, well, who's the father? And I told her it was my ex. And she's like, okay, we're done. And I was like, oh, she's joking, right? Like, they always picked up my shit. Sorry, I'm trying to go. They always picked up my stuff. They always picked up what I, you know, all the messes I made through my whole life, they fixed. They fixed everything. They did everything for me. They didn't, you know, yes, they were loving, they're encouraging. I look back at it now and I'm so grateful for my parents. But I see it how I used them for my own gain. And it didn't help me. And so then I looked at my ex and I said, here I am at this apartment, not paid rent for 4 months, about to be evicted in 2 days. You know, not knowing what to do, no place to live. Here I am 5 months pregnant and withdrawing. And so it was bad. It was really bad. And so we ended up going to his parents' house and staying at his parents' house in Jackson, California. And, you know, got married 2 weeks before my son was born. And my son was born, and best thing ever happened in my life. You know, I remember when I found out I was pregnant, the first thing out of my mouth was, I am not smart enough to be a mom. And I remember crying like crazy. But I had him, and he did change a lot for me. He changed me. But still, I did not take the drugs and alcohol away. You know, after I had him, my parents accepted my husband at the time because we were married. We weren't playing pretend marriage anymore. So we were married, and he was part of the family. And so my parents said, okay, you guys, we have a house here in Visalia. We have a job for your husband. And we have a car for you. We want you to come and start your family. And we were just like, sweet, they're giving us everything. You know, here we go. And we were using and drinking at the time. And here we have, you know, he's probably a year when we moved here. He was a year old. So we came here and stopped using and drinking for a little bit, and my husband got a job, and I was the stay-at-home mom, and going crazy. You know, I had this, you know, all those dysfunctional things I've gone through, and yet drugs and alcohol took that away. I hated it, you know, and I didn't want to turn to food like I did in high school. I didn't want to do anything, you know, I couldn't do anything about it, so I started drinking again. And so then my ex got fired from his job because he started using again. And it was the manipulation with my parents. You know, we don't have money for this, and we don't have money for this. And they would buy us clothes, buy us gifts, and it was returning them. You know, instant we got it, let's go back. You know, and it was playing the receipt game at Walmart, playing the receipt game at Target, all the tricks I learned when I was homeless. And it was just, and then I got to the point that I told myself I was too good enough to panhandle. No, I'm not panhandling anymore. You know, here I am with a year-old baby, you know, I'm not doing this. And so my neighbor, he was an elderly person, and he gave me his keys, said, I trust you guys. If, you know, my sister calls you and you don't hear from me, you guys are welcome to come in my house and make sure I'm okay. And we would sit there and watch until he left, and I would go in, and we'd steal stuff. Like, it got to the point that it was pawning his stuff and stealing his stuff to get our fix. And February 14th of 2013, of course, Valentine's Day, police officers knocked on our door at 6 o'clock at night and said, "Are you, you know," they started questioning us, and he reported us. He turned us in. You know, we got charged for 3 felonies that night. It was home burglary and 2 fraud counts. And here I am with my little almost 2-year-old getting handcuffed, and I could not talk my way out of it. And I called my sister, and my sister came and got my son, and I just remember sitting in the back of the cop car and the police officer telling me, "You need to get a divorce." And because then I'm playing the victim again. It wasn't me. It was all his idea. He did it all. I did nothing wrong. I'm perfect. What are you talking about? Because I, like the shell, it's all about persona. My mom taught me, always smile. You can just always say you're happy, you know, and it's, I don't want to be that camouflage person anymore. You know, and went to jail that night, first time in jail, and going through withdrawals is not fun with 80 women, and it was a different change, and I ended up staying in jail for 7 days, and my husband got bailed out in one night, and his parents bailed him out, and my parents said, "No, if you want this lifestyle, you can stay in jail," and that was hard. I cried every night. You know, it was not fun. I never want to go back to jail. Sorry. Like jail at all. But we got my reprimand date. We got out. They ended up taking the 3 felonies and changing it to a misdemeanor. So I got a misdemeanor in commercial burglary. And I had to do house arrest. And, you know, I did everything the courts wanted me to do. I paid the fines. I made sure all my T's were crossed, my I's were dotted. And yet I was still drinking. And the court, by then, my parents said, "You know, what are you going to do with your ex, your husband?" And so they said, "You know, is it your son or him?" And I got a divorce, and he understood why I was going to get a divorce. And the judge said, "Well, you know, you need to get a poly substance abuse counselor. You both have relapse in your background. How are you guys fit parents? You know, I don't understand." And I ended up meeting a wonderful person in my life, and he guided me on... He actually was the first person that called me on my BS. I never had that happen, like, to my face. Like, "You're lying to me." And I cried for hours. And I guess opening up to finally that one person and getting all those, like, how I really felt out, felt amazing. And, you know, he introduced me to my sponsor. You know, I actually started going to meetings wanting to work the steps. And my first year... was hard because I was half in, half out. I wanted my sponsor to do all the work. She would come over and she's like, "You read this?" And I'm like, "Uh-huh." And I'd do that, "No." And "I really haven't." Or, "Have you done this work?" And I'm like, "Uh-huh, no." And "I haven't." And it was the game. It was constant, you know, trying to shove those puzzle pieces in. And I felt so angry. You know, I didn't know what to do anymore. And here I am with a 2-year-old. By myself, have to go back to work, trying to, you know, start my life over again. No friends. Family is scared of me, you know, and I ended up almost getting a year, and I relapsed 2 weeks before my year, and that's, remember, I remember sitting there crying and calling my sponsor, and I just said, "I'm done. I'm done fighting this program. I need to do this." And I jumped, you know, feet first all the way in, and I've done everything she's asked. I found a spiritual awakening that I've never had before. And it's amazing. I have this bomb spiritual connection with my higher power. You know, he really helps me. I turned my will, my life over to him, and he's opening this gate. He's relieved me of my obsession, and I've worked the steps thoroughly. And it's just, you know, I have an amazing job today. I work as a dispatcher at Ready Rooter Plumbing in Visalia, and I've been there 2 years. I celebrated 2 years on February 10th, and they gave me another raise again, you know, saying, "We're so proud you're here with us." You know, my son, he'll be 6 in May,
little baby.
And, you know, he gets to see me, you know, and I get to be that mom, clean and sober and not falling down and busting my head open like I did. How many times I woke up with blood on my hair and thinking, "Oh, crap, did I kill something?" And it was gashes in my head, you know. I've horrific blackout stories. And it was just, you know, today I get to be present. You know, I get to be here. I have 24 days non-smoker. Right? Come on. 24 teenage non-smoker, and I smoked a lot of cigarettes my whole life. And, you know, that was really hard for me, and I did it for my teeth. And I have to get work done on my teeth, and I'm committed. It's a lot of money, and you know what? I am part of this financially, you know, and I work hard for this, and I'm part of society, and I don't need to skip on it. And I am just, I'm tickled. I told my sponsor Wednesday, I realized I was so angry the last 2 days because I've wanted a cigarette so bad. And I just was like, I'm 31. I should smoke a cigarette. And I'm like, you know what? Why am I fighting this? I decided to quit. And I've quit harder things than this. And letting that master go, that ball and chain, I have this freedom now. And it's different. I feel different. And I express myself in calm, like I tell my father, confidence and calmness. You know, I love waking up. You know, yeah, I'm not like waking up at 5 anymore to have my cigarette. I'm waking up like 6-ish now. And I get to get up regular and, you know, just thank God that I'm not in prison. I was going to face a long time with those 3 felonies. Like, I was scared. It was going to be a very long time. And I get to be out and about. You know, my son has kindergarten. I get to watch him. And I get to make amends to him. You know, I've had my moments. I'm a mom, you know, and you get to have those moments. You know, I've done amends with my family, and they trust me today. You know, they say how proud they are, and it's more living in action. They see it. I don't have to prove it. They get to see it. And I'm excited to make more amends. You know, I get to go back to Monterey soon and see those people I really hurt bad. And I have the financial means to pay them back. And I have, you know, to own my mistakes, you know, and I get to do that today. And to be in a spiritual, like my boss, she's very spiritual. I love walking into my business knowing, you know, God's everywhere. He is everywhere. But to really feel it, you know, I am so grateful for this program. You know, I don't know what else to say. Is that good? So I just want to say thank you so much, everyone, for being here. And I'm so glad that you guys are part of the sobriety with me. And you guys, it's a big journey out there. And I'm excited for everyone. So thank you so much for being here.